and welcome to the Q1 AFE results presentation call. Please note this call is being recorded. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end. This can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you require assistance at any point, please press star zero and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to Eric Berette to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Justin, Tim, and I will take you through the presentation, and then we will open the line for a Q&A session at the end. As usual, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page one of the presentation and particularly the comments regarding forward-looking statements. I'll now pass on to Justin Salter for the Q1 highlights.
Thanks, Eric. I'm pleased to report that AFE delivered a 13th consecutive quarter of collections outperformance to forecast, with Q1 gross attributable collections of 16.1 million euros, which is 9% above forecast of 14.8 million. The company did continue to limit deployment in order to enhance liquidity and decrease leverage, with only 4.6 million of follow-on capital into pre-existing investments. ERC of 539 million was just incrementally lower than Q1 2022, with further embedded ERC growth of 63 million euros to be delivered from already contracted follow-on investments. Leverage at 3.3x last 12-month adjusted EBITDA was down from 3.55x year-on-year and already in line with revised long-term guidance of 3x-3.5x, with an LTV of 68.5% as at the end of Q1. As highlighted, we continue to actively manage our liability structure with the RCF maturity extended to the 31st of December this year and reducing to 60 million euros from July onwards. We're evaluating a range of public and private refinancing alternatives actively with sustainable leverage in line with long-term target, strong interest coverage, and an increasingly compelling investment environment to capitalize on. I'll turn it back over to Eric for the financial highlights.
Turning to page seven of the presentation, the group had a good financial performance for the quarter ending March 31st, 2023. The gross attributable collections for the quarter was 16.1, which was 16.3% lower than Q1 2022, but 9% above our December 2022 collections forecast. Revenues were up to 16.9 million, which was 21% up versus Q1 2022. This number includes 1.2 million of asset-light revenues from our asset solutions business, which is up 9% compared to Q1 2022. EBITDA increased to 111 million for the last 12 months, which was 11.2% above the same period last year. As Justin mentioned, in the quarter, we continued to limit deployment to enhance liquidity and decrease leverage, with only 4.6 million of deployment as follow-on investment into existing assets. As a result, ERC decreased to 538.8 million, which was 0.8% below the prior year, and net debt increased 3.8% to 369 million. As Justin also mentioned, we have an extra 63 million of embedded ERC growth from contractual follow-on investment already that we have signed. Turning to page eight, the company has now achieved 13 consecutive quarters of overperformance to forecasted ERC, which you can see in the graph at the bottom of the page, with 9% overperformance for Q1 2023. On the top graph, we're showing you our gross attributable collection over the last two years. As you can see, our historical collections have been cyclical, with Q1 typically being the lowest quarter, and usually the bulk of our collections is in the second half. For 2023, the expected collection profile is similar, with 60% of forecasted collections expected in the second half of the year. Turning to page nine, we're showing you that our last 12-month gross attributable collection was up to 154 million euros, which was 16.7% higher than the same period last year. As a result, the cash flow generation of the business remains high, with the last 12-month free cash flow at 84 million, which is up 12% on the same period last year. This strong ability to generate significant free cash flows is driven by our strong collection performance over the last quarters and our low fixed cost structure. Moving to page 10. On this page, we're showing you our financial KPIs, which continue to be very healthy. Our leverage was at 3.32x as at the end of the quarter, which is within our revised long-term leverage guidance of 3x-3.5x. Our interest coverage ratio was 5.3x, and LTV was 68.5%. We also increased liquidity to $25 million as at the end of the quarter. Finally, moving to page 11, thanks to the support of our banking partners, we extended the maturity of the RCF to December 23, which will reduce to $60 million by July 2023. This reduction of the RCF was as previously anticipated and is more aligned to our capital structure. In the coming quarters, we expect to continue to temporarily reduce our deployment and take management actions to accelerate cash flow where optimal to continue to build liquidity. Finally, on the refinancing of the bond, we're currently working with our advisor on public and private refinancing work streams. We expect to start having discussions with market participants in the coming weeks. And we'll now pass on to Tim to cover our asset management performance.
Thanks, Eric. Let's start by turning to slide 13, where we show you our 84-month ERC curve. At the end of the quarter, ACRC was $539 million, with an additional $63 million of ERC growth already embedded in the curve from contracted follow-on investments. Now, as mentioned in our previous call, $63 million is the additional ERC we will recognize as we deploy additional capital that's already committed into existing deals. You can see most of our ERC is expected over the next 3 years, driven by our direct real estate investments, and this gives us high visibility to rising free cash flow over this period. In the current investment environment, we're also seeing an increasingly attractive pipeline of opportunities to add to our ERC curve, which Justin will talk about shortly. Over the page on slide 14, as you can see, our ERC remains highly diversified and underpinned by a strong and over-collateralized portfolio. The portfolio has good diversification across countries. Similar to the update last time, we've seen a continued reduction in our Southern European exposure, which is down from 57% to 51% of ERC year on year. This is offset by the UK and France, which combined have increased from 37% to 45% year on year. In terms of asset composition, 86% of our ERC is backed by secured assets, including direct real estate investments, and these are predominantly income-generating assets, as we mentioned previously. It's also worth noting the book is almost entirely evenly balanced between NPLs and direct real estate, with NPLs at 47%, direct real estate at 53% of ERC at quarter end, which is broadly the same as last quarter. Moving over the page to slide 15, as mentioned, NPLs accounts for 47% of ERC, or $251 million. This is a highly seasoned backbook with over 70% of ERC coming from secured NPLs. The underlying book is very granular, consisting of over 120,000 loans with an average balance of just over 30,000 euros. And our secured ERC is heavily backed by around 260 million of collateral value. The large majority of this, around 152 million, is in granular residential assets, with a balance across a very diverse base of different asset types. Over the page on slide 16, on the direct real estate side, we continue to focus on building a diversified portfolio of predominantly income-generating assets, and we continue to target winning assets from distressed sellers in top-tier locations. As mentioned before, direct real estate represents 53% of ACRC, and it's spread across the UK, France, and Italy. The portfolio is also very well diversified by asset type, consisting mainly of office, retail, residential, and student housing assets. The portfolio also includes embedded optionality, where we have the ability to hold assets for longer rather than sell, and this gives us the option to capture additional income in outer years, should we choose. So moving to slide 17, in terms of brief market update, overall we saw continued strong performance in Q1, as mentioned by Eric, and both Eric and Justin. Despite increased economic headwinds across the markets, you know, the business still managed to generate 13th consecutive quarter of collections outperformance against forecast. I'll briefly touch on each of our key markets. Starting with Italy, where we have exposure to both NPLs and direct real estate, collections performance remains strong in our NPLs, driven by the team's continued focus on accelerating cash and court distributions and negotiating amicable settlements. Yeah, generally, we're seeing residential asset prices remain resilient, particularly in the key cities we are investing, and this supports both secured NPL collections and direct real estate assets. On the direct real estate assets in Italy, we've sold or pre-sold over 60% of units now, with prices at an average premium in excess of 10% to our underwritten target. In the UK, the leasing markets for our assets remain positive, with prime headline rents continuing to increase in regional markets. We continue to see good demand for our space, with average occupancy on our UK properties just below 75% now. In Spain, the property markets remain resilient, and collections outperformed in Q1, despite credit restrictions, inflation pressures, and some backlogs emerging in the court system. Against these headwinds, the Asset Solutions team continued to proactively and forensically manage all legal cases, and are combining this with targeted loan sales and REO campaigns to accelerate collections. In France, although office take-up was below historical averages in Q1, we continue to see good demand for our space. The average occupancy across our portfolios, our property portfolio remains 81% at the end of the quarter. We're also seeing rents in supply-constrained locations increasing, which we're benefiting from across a number of assets in our portfolio. I'll now hand back to Justin to talk about the strategic outlook.
Thanks, Tim. Turning to slide 19, after such a protracted period of low rates and a thirst for yield, we are now seeing an increasingly compelling investment environment with a growing pipeline of attractive opportunities. Currently, we see $2 billion in potential investment of executable pipeline, offering further diversification across well-known countries and asset types, where we continue to target predominantly real estate secured opportunities from increasingly motivated sellers in the face of more limited risk appetite from banks and wider investors. There's a significant uptick already being seen in the NPL pipeline from now both primary and secondary sellers, with banks looking to address legacy volumes before inevitably turning to new NPL formation. This is represented by improved competitive dynamics with less asset chasing and an ability to capture better risk-adjusted returns. Turning to slide 20, in summary, we delivered a continued strong collections performance with the 13th consecutive quarter above forecast. The strong cash flow generation, which is delivering high interest coverage and stable, sustainable leverage of 3.3 times, which is already in line with our long-term guidance and lower than inception in 2017. Stable ERC with an additional 63 million euros of ERC growth already embedded from contracted follow-on investments. Turning to what's next. As discussed, we continue to limit deployment in the short term to enhance our liquidity position and reduce leverage, with the RCF being brought down to 60 million as previously anticipated and more aligned with the size of our overall capital structure. We continue to actively evaluate both public and private refinancing alternatives, targeting a near-term solution to enable the business to continue to capitalize on what we see as easily the most compelling investment environment in over a decade. With that, we'll turn it over to questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question on today's call, please press star one on your telephone keypad. That is star one for your questions today. We will pause for a brief moment. Once again, that is star one for any questions you may have today. And we just received our first question from Kunal Shah of Warwick Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for hosting the call. Just wanted to confirm, with your sort of anticipated reduced deployment for this fiscal year, do you forecast and anticipate to stay within your leverage guidance for the rest of this year? And could you give us any comments around how the cost to collect might evolve for your the front end of your ERC curve, please?
You will have seen, I'll start with the cost to collect. You will have seen in our press release that our core collection cost ratio has increased to 67% in the first quarter, which is purely driven by the fact that obviously Q1 collection is always lower. If you look at our last 12-month core collection, it's 30%. We've always said that we expect that, you know, ratio to stay stable or even come down as the mix of the NPL and real estate shifts. So I think we expect this number to keep on going down. On your first collection, on leverage, our long-term guidance is 3 to 3.5. Obviously, our collection, and then you've seen in the pitch, is kind of volatile quarter to quarter. So you might see a spike in the short term, but I think you would revert to that range. So I think we're fairly comfortable with that. As we said in the pitch, we expect 60% of our collection to be in the back end. If you look at last year's Q2 collection, it was a very large collection period, which was driven by a few extraordinary. So I think Q2 was one where potentially you would see leverage go up, but then quickly coming down afterwards. So I think long term, we're comfortable with our range, but maybe Q2 is the one where it's a bit unsure at this point in time.
Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, that is star one for your questions today. We will pause for a further moment. We now have a question from Shahid Majid of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much for the presentation. A couple of quick questions from my side, please. First up, you know, with the debt maturity coming due, I'm sure you would have put together a business case or a management forecast for how you think the deployment is expected to move in the next, you know, 2-3 years. I was hoping if you could give us some color on that, you know, both in terms of the absolute euros that you, you know, plan to spend after this year when you'll be cutting it down. And also, if you can tell us a bit more on what kind of multiples you expect to purchase portfolios on the look forward.
Sure. I think from a deployment standpoint, I think we've always been pretty clear about the fact that we'd like to be at a run rate, certainly back in line with where we were last year, around 100 million euros plus. As you can see, from which we think in our business case is achievable again, obviously we're trying to get through the refinancing in the short term, but then renew that trajectory. I think there is an opportunity with ERC growth embedded, as you'll see in our curve, to potentially exceed that incrementally. But I think getting to 100 million, circa 100 million euros plus again as a long-term run rate is absolutely the goal, and we think keeps us in line with our revised guidance if we can do that. I think money multiples, clearly, you know, we saw many years of continued compression in multiples kind of from 2000, really 15, 16 onward. I think that trend is clearly reversed as evidenced in our recent deployment, and we expect that to continue. As we mentioned, we're seeing not only real estate opportunities from distressed sellers, but also NPLs come back to the market again. And consistently, as we continue to raise the bar, I do think others are as well. And we're confident in continuing to target our levels of deployment, the kind of 1.8 to 2 times plus range of money multiples that we've evidenced in the recent past. We certainly think that's, you know, more achievable than probably, I wouldn't say ever, you know, getting back to sort of post-financial crisis, you know, multiples. You know, there's a lot more capital out there today than when the last crisis hit, but certainly we think they're widening out to that kind of much healthier, sustainable range.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you. Just one more question, please. If you can please remind us the dynamics between AFC and Weld Capital and also the new shareholding structure at Weld.
Sure. AFC remains a permanent investment vehicle that Weld manages alongside its wider funds. We have what we define as credit opportunities funds, investing in a broad range of asset types, including performing, non-performing debt, real estate, as well as we have an additional real estate vehicle, a closed-end vehicle to continue to invest in alongside AFE. This gives us the ability to capture a wider opportunity set to increase diversification by investment across all of our funds. You know, we think this is a positive where the funds where we allocate deals across the various vehicles and achieve effectively lower concentration, greater diversification for each of them, including AFE. The structure, as we previously discussed with Valve, simply represented a carve-out of the Anacap credit business to form Valve Capital. Previously, Anacap had two strategies side by side, private equity focused on financial services and credit. The credit business, led by myself since inception in 2009, is now in its own standalone vehicle with myself and other partners in the business owning, controlling the business and align with the strategic development of it going forward. This was very much something to position the business for the next 10 years, as much around succession planning and development of the business over the long term, in terms of moving away from its roots as part of NICAP.
I would say, in terms of change of shareholders, this happened at the level, two levels above where the bond is. And so the change of the restriction group, nothing has changed from the restriction group perspective of the bond.
Thank you. That's helpful. Sorry, I didn't get the shareholding bit. Do you mind repeating that for me, please?
No, there was a minority investment that came in into to Bell Capital, but in terms of this change, the shareholding of ACE, but this was made two levels above the ACE entity where the bond is.
So nothing's changed in the bond structure.
Yeah. Okay, but the new investor in Weld came in and had a minority stake. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a new financial partner who is part of the management company, which manages both AIF as well as our wider closed-end funds.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And as a final reminder, that is star one for your questions today. There appears to be no further questions at this time, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee.
Perfect, thank you. That concludes today's call, everyone. You may now disconnect.